The song we just sang, I stand amazed in the presence of Jesus the Nazarene and wonder how he could love me, a sinner condemned unclean. And Brother Ernie, that must have been the Holy Spirit, because in the room, I said, I'm going to ask that we sing that song. And when I came, that was a hymn that you chose. And I think that's God's doing. I am really surprised to be where I am today, especially when I look back to where I came from. I was not born in America. You must have realized that. I came from a very small community in Guyana, a community which was an outgrowth of a sugar estate. And all the people in that community were migrants from India. There were no other race in that community but Indians, not even Africans, nor Chinese, nor Portuguese, or whites, or nobody. The only whites there were the overseers that overlooked the people who work on the sugar plantations, and those who are from England, very few of them. But I grew up in a community like that. My mom and dad were Hindus, very strict Hindus. And every Friday night, we had a reading of the Ramayana, their holy book. And as children, we had to sit quietly. We didn't know what they were reading. They never interpreted it to us, but we knew we had to sit very quietly. And you know what I admired about that? This holy book was never left carelessly anywhere. It was always wrapped up in a piece of cloth and put away on a shelf. And today, I am a little distressed and disturbed to see how people handle our holy book, the Holy Bible. However, I learned from them that the holy book has to be revered, whatever was written in it. And we were taught to worship many gods. Idolatry was prominent in the Hindu community, because if you know anything about the Hindu religion in India, Hinduism is the biggest religion in India. It's only recently, or perhaps in the last two decades or so, that Christianity has infiltrated India. Maybe a little before that. But prior to that, Hinduism was all over India. So these people who came from India, they were immersed in Hinduism. And so we worship many gods, idols. In our home, we had some of them. And not only that, but we also worship the sun. Because in the mornings, my parents would get up and go to face the sun and pour water to the sun. And then, once a year, we did a sacrifice, a real animal sacrifice. And I didn't know, I mean, if it was right or wrong. I was growing up in this religion. And so they would sacrifice a pig, and they would offer it to whoever god they were worshiping. I was not fully aware. And then the meat would be given away to whoever wanted to eat that animal. But that's how much, how deep I was in Hinduism. And then, growing up in such a community, you never talk back to your parents and you never ask questions. You do as they say. And when the adults are speaking, you dare not ask a question. You sit there and you listen and your mouth is sealed. However, it was time for school. I was already about 7, 8 years old, and the only school that was in that community was a school that was established by the Canadian Mission. It was a group of people from Canada who opened a school in all parts of Guyana. And in that community where I lived, they opened the only school there. It was called the Canadian Mission School. At the Canadian Mission School, a gentleman by the name of Thomas, he was a catechist. He taught at that school. And so we would sing choruses like, there were 12 disciples, the way of the cross leads home, and, you know, many choruses that we sing here today. And then they begin inviting us to Sunday school. Well, apparently my parents didn't know what was going on at the school, so they allowed me to go because I was the youngest in the family. And I got so excited with the stories and the songs. I'll come home and sing them. We had a hammock. I'll sit all afternoon and sing these songs. And somehow or the other, those stories took root in my life. The commandments. You wouldn't believe me, but that's where I learned the Ten Commandments. And the first one was, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And it stuck with me all those years. And little by little, as I grew older, I understand that idolatry is unacceptable. And here in our home, we have idols. We had one that they call Hanuman. His mouth was like the monkey. That's why Hindus revere monkeys, in case you don't know. You go to India, and there are droves of monkeys, and you dare not touch them. And I didn't know that. And then there's a god of the sun and a god of the moon and all different kinds of god. We had some in our homes. And I was made to understand that those were all false gods, and I should not worship them. I didn't say anything to my parents because that would have been, you know what, a good flogging for me. So I didn't say anything, but I kept going to Sunday school. And there were not too many children in Sunday school. There were about maybe three girls, and I think three boys or two boys. That was the group. But then as I became older, I was about 12 years now, and the catechist became a good friend of my parents and told them about baptism. And apparently they didn't know too much about what baptism was, neither did I. So they consented for me to get baptized, and I got baptized. That news went to the community. And the people stopped talking to my parents. They thought that now they are allowing their daughter to go wild. And then in that community, people never send their children, their daughters, beyond grade 6. When you complete grade 6, it is time for you to leave school. And you come home and you do the chores with your mom. She will teach you to cook, to clean, and to do sewing. You gotta know how to make a dress or make a shirt or something like that. You have to learn to take care of a family. And so my mom decided that she was going to send me to school because she wanted me to become a nurse. And she continued sending me to school past the sixth grade. And the next grade was where you wrote an exam called the pupil teacher's exam. You're a pupil, you become a teacher, and you work under a senior teacher. So somewhere along the line, I told them, I don't want to be a nurse. I can't look at blood. I'll faint. I cannot dress a bruise. I don't want to be a nurse. So they decide, okay, go, and you'll do the school leaving the pupil teacher's examination. In the meantime, the people in the community were incensed against my parents, and very few of them spoke to them. So we were like the outcasts in the village. Anyway, I went. The principal now, they appointed a headmaster, they call them in those days. They appointed a headmaster for the school, and that headmaster was a Christian. And he kind of embraced me, him and his wife, and one of the teachers who were teaching at school. And they encouraged me in my faith. So baptism, I came to understand what it really means, because at first I didn't quite understand. And then it says, well, you have given your life to Jesus. You have been redeemed. If you believe that Jesus has died for you on the cross, you have been redeemed. And now you have to live to please him. You have to read the Holy Word. I didn't have a Bible, but they gave me a book, John's Gospel. They told me to read it. And then, you know, you read, I'm the Good Shepherd, I'm the True Vine, and stuff like that. And those things stayed with me. Anyway, I did go and write the exam, and you know, I began to pray. I didn't know how to pray. I would just talk like I'm talking. Oh Lord, help me to pass this exam. Oh Lord, help me, I want to be a teacher. And that's all I would say, whatever I want. I just, spoke it in child's language, so to speak, no fancy language. However, I went, I was... two girls went to write that exam, and three boys. And in that entire region, there was never a female teacher. It was always male teacher. When the result was published, guess whose name was on the list? Before that night, and that's how my faith was kind of grounded, I dreamt the cross. I saw the cross. I didn't see Jesus on the cross. And something told me that day, you passed the test. And when I went to school, I said nothing to anyone. And the principal announced that day, the headmaster, that I had passed the test. And he was so thrilled to have a young woman passed that test that he gave a half a day holiday to the school. And you know, from then on, I believed more in Jesus, that if I call out to him, he will hear me. And I said, Lord, I don't know what else to ask you, but please guide me through life. It so happened the next year my mom died. And so I began living with my older sister. And she encouraged me to go to church because her house was not far away from the school where the church was kept. And the principal and them were friends. So I went to church and I learned more and more about Jesus. And I say, you know, what my parents are doing is really not right. How can you speak to an object that has arms, cannot move, have ears, they don't hear, they don't talk to you, not even in a still small voice? And so what I did, I would sit and read John's Gospel. And I learned the 23rd Psalm. I learned the Apostles' Creed, I learned the Ten Commandments, and these are the things that helped me to grow as a Christian. And you know, looking back, I remember the story that Brother Ernie told about Gideon. Gideon was not prepared. And when the angel spoke to Gideon and said, mighty man of God, and stuff like that, that's how I felt. God is going to use me as a teacher. And so I began teaching right in that community. And I helped with the Sunday school. Not too many people in the Sunday school. Maybe 3-4, but I helped in whatever way I can. But then, you know, if you really know me, I don't stop at anything meager. I like to go beyond. I like to explore. So I went to this office, which was in the town, which I don't know too much how to travel in those days. From where we lived to get to the town, we had to take a boat. And then you get to the stop where the boat stops, and you have to take a bus and go to the office of the Canadian Presbyterian Church. And there, I decide to go. And I told them, I would like to have a transfer. Because I was in darkness, even though the Lord had shed light on me, darkness surrounded me all around. There was Hindu temple, there was a Madras temple, they did witchcraft. Lionel must know about this too. And these things began driving fear in me. Once a year, the Madras church would have an invocation of, I have to say, evil spirits. And then they would dance in the whole community and people would give them offerings and stuff like that. Then on the Sunday, they assemble themselves in this big churchyard, not church, temple yard, and they would walk the head off a goat or a chicken or a cock or something like that, and they would drink the blood. And I said, I don't want to stay here. This is like driving fear in me. So I went to this office. And the gentleman looked at me. I was perhaps more skinnier and shorter looking. And he looked at me. And he said, why do you want to transfer? And I said, well, I want to go to a place where I will be more enlightened. And he looked at me kind of funny, and I didn't know what else to tell him, but I think God was working on my behalf. And he said, okay, in September, I'm going to send you to J.B. Cropper School, which was in a more affluent area, let me put it that way. And you know, God makes a way. He puts people in your lives to help you. When I went there, I became friends with a young woman who was teaching at the school, my age too. I think she was a year younger than I am. But her family were good Christian family. They were Canadian mission people. And so the father was like a lay preacher at the church. And all the brothers and sisters, they all went to that church. And I stayed with them. And every Sunday we will go to church and sing praises and worship. And then we had midweek meetings on a Wednesday. And, you know, I have to say those people molded me into being a good Christian. And God does send people like that in your life. Monday before I came here, I got a call. And that's the same young lady who was my best friend then. She called to tell me, I have some sad news for you. So I said, what? I thought her elder brother had died. Mom and Dad passed away a long time. And I said, anything happened to David? And she said, no. But Arnold died. And you know, that was like a part of my family died, because that was the family that encouraged me in my Christian faith. And God does send people like that. And when God chooses you, he has a plan for your life. You know, I have a verse written here from Jeremiah 29:11. And it says, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. And the Lord did just that for me. I have come in contact with children from many, many schools. Many of them now are lawyers and doctors and teachers and policemen, housewives, whatever they are. Once in a while, I come in contact with them. There's a young man at the school where I retired from recently. Well, not recently, it's 4 years now. And he said to me, he calls me Mom. He said, Mom, I have to thank you. You are the one who encouraged me in my faith. He was having a kind of relationship with a young woman, and I tried to tell him it's not for you and all of that. Release it to the Lord, surrender it. It was a difficult thing for him to do, but eventually he listened and he did, only to find out that that young woman was having an affair with somebody else. Long story short, it didn't work out. But I God has used me as a teacher to touch the lives of young people. And I have not been to the missionary field. I have not been a preacher, but I've been a teacher who taught more than academics. And I'll just share with you a little story. About 5 years ago, or 6 years, 2 years prior to my retirement, a young man in my class came to tell me, "I am not coming back to school tomorrow." His name was Anthony. And I said, "Why aren't you coming back, Anthony? We have exams 3 months from now." He said, "Well, my mom is moving up to New York, moving upstate New York, and she's taking me and my sister with her." I said, "Why, Anthony?" And he said to me, "My mom and my dad are not agreeing with each other. They are fighting." And I said to him, "Anthony, is this the first time they're having quarrel?" And he said, "No." I say, "Okay, Anthony, we'll talk after assembly and, you settle the class." And after the class was settled, I put the rest of the student to work and I took Anthony outside. And I say, "Anthony, tell me the truth. This is not the first time your mom and dad had quarrel." And he said to me, "No, it's been a long time. And my mom doesn't talk to my dad, and my dad doesn't talk to my mom. And my mom says she has had enough of it, and she's moving out." I say, "Okay, Anthony." Well, I thought about it. And lunchtime came, and I said, "Anthony, go and have lunch and ask the supervisor to send you up back as soon as you finish lunch." And you know what I did? God really uses us no matter where we find ourselves. During that lunch break, I sat and I wrote a letter, pretending it was Anthony writing this letter. "Dear Mom, dear Dad," and I wrote that, "you know, it hurts me to leave you and to go away with Mom. And my desire is to live with you and Mom. And my sister and I now have to live all by ourselves with Mom alone, and you are going to..." A very nice letter I wrote, a one-page letter. So the child came up back, and I said to him, "Anthony, I want you to sit in that desk over there." We always had a desk for behavior problem away from the rest of the class. "Sit over there, read this letter, and tell me if you want to write this letter to your dad." And he read it, and he said, "Yes, I would like to write this letter to his..." he would like to write the letter to his dad. And I said, "Okay, Anthony, sit, and in your own handwriting, you copy this letter." And so Anthony did. In the afternoon, I said, "Anthony, take this letter, put it on your dad's dresser, put it on his pillow, wherever you think he's going to find it." Anthony went, and he didn't come back to school the next day. I didn't hear anything. I saw the mother in the office, and she said, "Teach, I am moving out, and I'm taking Anthony and the little girl with me, and we're going upstate New York." I said, "You sure you want to do this?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Well, think about it seriously." Anyway, when they went, Anthony's dad, maybe it was a Saturday, I think, or a Friday, he must have found the letter. He read that letter. And what do you think? He went back, brought his wife home, and brought his two children home. The day when I retired, this tall young man came up the ramp to the school, and he said, "Do you remember me?" And I said, "Are you Anthony?" And he said, "Yes." And he gave me such a hug, and he said, "Thank you for saving my mom and my dad's marriage." I didn't save dad and mom's marriage. It was God who did that. And I can tell you stories upon stories. But I'll allow Sister Monica to tell her story. But when God chooses you, he has a plan for you. Listen to him and attune your ears to his voice, because other voices will be out there. And choose your friends wisely. Friends who would be bold enough and strong enough to tell you, no, don't do that, it's not right. Friend who would tell you that you are doing something wrong when it is wrong. And I am truly blessed to have this privilege to share with you how God had brought me out of darkness into his kingdom of light. He has redeemed me, and he renews me day by day. What I am today is not what I was last year or last month. I am still growing in him. And there's much more for me to grow. Lots of growth to take place yet. And I thank you, Brother Arnie, for allowing me to share this testimony. Thank you.
He brought me out of the miry clay. He set my feet on a rock to stand. He puts a song in my soul.